Gospel of John, the 9th chapter. Jesus heals a man born blind. As he went along, he saw a man blind from birth. His disciples asked him, "Rabbi, who sinned, the man or his parents, that he's blind?" "Neither the man nor his parents sinned," said Jesus. "But this happened so that the work of God might be displayed in his life. As long as it is day, we must do the work of him who sent me. Night is coming when no one can work. While I am in the world, I am the light of the world." Having said this, he spit on the ground, made some mud with the saliva, and put it on the man's eyes. "Go," he told them, "wash in the pool of Siloam." This word means sent. So the man went and washed, and he came home seeing. His neighbors and those who had formerly seen him begging asked, "Isn't this the same man who used to sit and beg?" Some claimed that he was. Others said, no, he only looks like him. But he himself said, "I am the man." "How then were your eyes opened?" they demanded. He replied, "The man they called Jesus made some mud and put it on my eyes. He told me to go to Siloam and wash, so I went and I washed, and now I see." "Where is this man?" they asked. "I don't know," he said. The Pharisees investigate the healing. They brought to the Pharisees this man who had been blind. Now, on the day which Jesus had made the mud and opened the man's eyes, it was a Sabbath. Therefore, the Pharisees also asked him how he received his sight. "He put mud on my eyes," the man replied, "and I washed, and now I see." Some of the Pharisees said, "This man is not from God, for he does not keep the Sabbath." But others asked, "How can a sinner do such miraculous things?" So they were divided. Finally, they turned again to the blind man. "What have you to say about him? It was your eyes that he opened." The man replied, "He is a prophet." The Jews still did not believe that he had been blind and had received his sight until they sent for the man's parents. "Is this your son?" they asked. "Is this the one you say was born blind? How is it that he can now see?" "We know that he's our son," the parents answered. "And we know he was born blind. But how he can now see or who opened his eyes, we don't know. Ask him. He's of age. He can speak for himself." His parents said this because they were afraid of the Jews. For already the Jews had decided that anyone who acknowledged that Jesus was the Christ would be put out of the synagogue. That's why his parents said, "He's of age, ask him." A second time they summoned the man who had been blind. "Give glory to God," they said. "We know this man is a sinner." He replied, "Whether he is a sinner or not, I do not know. One thing I do know. I was blind, and now I see." Then they asked him, "What did he do to you? How did he open your eyes?" He answered, "I have told you already, and you did not listen. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you want to become his disciples too?" Then they hurled insults at him and said, "You are this fellow's disciple. We are disciples of Moses. We know God spoke to Moses. But as for this fellow, we don't even know where he came from." The man answered, "Now that is remarkable. You don't know where he comes from, yet he opened my eyes. We know that God doesn't listen to sinners. He listens to the godly man who does his will. Nobody has ever heard of opening the eyes of a man born blind. So if this man were not from God, he could do nothing. To this they replied, "You were steeped in sin at birth. How dare you lecture us?" And they threw him out. Jesus heard that they had thrown him out. And when he found him, he said, "Do you believe in the Son of Man?" "Who is he, sir?" the man asked. "Tell me that I may believe in him." And Jesus said, "You have now seen him. In fact, he's the one speaking with you." Then the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped him. Jesus said, "For judgment I have come into this world, so that the blind will see, and those who see will be blind." Some Pharisees who were with him heard him say this and asked, "What, are we blind too?" Jesus said, "If you were blind, you would not be guilty of sin. But now that you claim you can see, your guilt remains." Hear what the Spirit is saying.
Will you pray with me? God, may your wisdom come and speak to us, because we do stand in a great place of need. And I pray humbly, O God, that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart would be acceptable to you and a faithful offering in your service. In Jesus' name I pray, amen. When I was in college, I had the privilege of spending a semester abroad, and I lived in England, and almost every weekend would wander off on a train somewhere to explore. One long weekend, I traveled to Ireland and took a train to the far side, to the west side of the island, and visited a little town called Spittal. Now, I'm not bringing that up because of the story we heard, actually. The name of the town being a nice play on words, as I was reminded of after the first service. I visited this little town, Spittal, on the west coast of Ireland. And in this town, they still speak Gaelic. All of the signs are in Gaelic. It is a trip to be there. Anyway, it's one of the reasons I wanted to go. So I go there, and I put myself out of this tiny little village. They didn't have a youth hostel, so I set myself up in a B&B, which was about a mile outside of town, just about a mile outside of town. I had walked from town to the B&B during daylight, and on my way through town, I had seen that there was a little place that said they had live Irish music that was going to be happening that night. So I thought, perfect. After, you know, when it comes time for dinner, I will walk back into town, have a nice Irish pub meal, maybe a drink or two, and listen to some live Irish music. So that was my plan. I hung out for a little while, and after dark, I moved out to make my walk and make my way into the village. And it was, by the time I reached the end of the driveway, from the place that I was staying, I realized that we had a problem. It was pitch black. I mean, pitch black. There were no streetlights. There were no cars. There was no moon or stars even shining. There were no houses between my B&B and the village. I figure no step for a stepper, as my dad used to say to me. So I move out to the side of the road. I can feel my way along with my feet along the side of the asphalt. I thought, no problem. So I start making my way. I literally, in this pitch blackness, I just want you to understand, I would hold my hand out. I couldn't see my own hand in front of my face. Are you with me? I mean, it was, couldn't see a thing. So I'm like literally walking along the side of the road, feeling my way along, and I was doing well, and I was feeling pretty confident. And of course, I was too young and stupid to have a flashlight on me, just so if any of you were wondering, like, why didn't you take out your flashlight, silly? Well, I didn't have one. So here I am, going along, making my way, feeling pretty good about myself. And then I heard behind me someone whistling. And it was like, it was clearly a man's voice whistling. And it was that kind of whistling that you would hear in a horror film. You know? Like when you, the audience, can see everything that's happening, but the person who's on the road, who was not smart enough to bring a flashlight and is all the way across the world and nobody knows where she is and is trying to find her way into town with no light at all, and that person doesn't have a clue. Yeah, whistling behind me. So I just sort of tried to hold it together. That lasted maybe 5 seconds. And before I knew it, I felt my way over to the middle of the asphalt, what I imagined was the middle of the asphalt. Remember, can't see my hand. And I took off in a full-blown sprint. I mean, running to beat the band. I was sweating. I was crying. I could hear this guy gaining on me, even still. I finally reached the edge of the village. There was the blessed light. I found a park bench. I collapsed, heaving, crying in terror, and I waited. It was a few minutes, not many, and here he comes, riding his bicycle. He was about 75. Sweet little Irish man, completely oblivious to my terror, whistling away. Oh my, oh my. You know, in the dark, we imagine all sorts of things. Often the worst possible scenarios, like horror film scenarios. Our deepest fears well up within us, and we can't help but acknowledge the deep insecurity of our lives, the fact that we are vulnerable, and that we aren't in control of the universe, and that there are things we don't know, that we don't and can't understand. To be in the dark means that we cannot see. We cannot see perhaps the way forward. We can't see perhaps a way out. We can't find out or discover where we are. And sometimes we can't even see ourselves, our own hand in front of our face. What are the things in our lives that keep us from seeing, that keep us in the dark? Well, there are many. A few that I would name: preconceived notions about the way things are, prejudices that blind us to others, fear of change, old patterns and habits of seeing and thinking, depression and anxiety, ignorance, selfishness, cynicism, skepticism. When we are out of some communication loop, we might imagine that in that place of being in the dark, we might imagine and be ready to assume that someone must be trying to hide something from us for some dark purpose. The truth is that we all have blind spots, those areas in our lives or relationships that we struggle to see, where we struggle to see with any semblance of clarity. This past week, we have together experienced so many tragic examples of the blind spots that continue to plague human relationships. The killing of Michael Brown highlights the deeply painful reality that when encountering a black or brown, especially male, body, what many people see is a criminal or a threat instead of a child of God who is deeply beloved. The decision made by a Tampa church to cancel Julian Evans' funeral the night before the service, once it was discovered that he was a married gay man, reminds us of how prejudice can blind people to compassion. The suicide of Robin Williams reminds us that there are people whose despair blinds them to any possible hope. It also reminds us that there are those suffering all around us whose pain may be invisible to us, but is very real indeed. The ongoing wars and atrocities in the Middle East and truly all around the world are daily reminders of the ways that the human family cannot see its sisters and brothers as human beings of sacred worth and dignity, but only see the other as an enemy to be destroyed. In our gospel story today, we see that this kind of thing is nothing new. When the man who had formerly been blind is brought to the leaders of the religious establishment, the response is simply stunning. Do they rejoice and give thanks to God for the man's healing? No. In essence, they put the man on trial. What? An act of love, affirmation, and new life getting put on trial? Really? That never happens anymore. At the hands of the religious establishment. The first response of the Pharisees is to focus on the fact that the healing had been done on the Sabbath, that the rules had been broken. Another response is simple disbelief. They just aren't buying it. This man must be lying. He must not once have been blind. Finally, it becomes clear that the real focus of these proceedings is to figure out who is a sinner. And the result? The ultimate verdict is that both the man who now sees and Jesus are sinners. The man whose life has been changed, whose darkness has been turned to light, who stands as a testimony to the possibility of radical healing change, is then driven out of the community. It seems ludicrous, really, when we stop and we look at what happens in this story. But my friends, if we quickly decide that we would never respond to such a wonderful miracle as the Pharisees in the story respond, then we just might, if we're listening, hear Jesus saying to us, "If you say we see, you reveal your blindness." We all, to some degree, need to check our eyesight. And if we look to Jesus to help us out on this, we need to be prepared for things to get a little messy. Because a very basic truth that we learn from our story today is this: between blindness and sight, there is mud. Between blindness and sight, there is mud. Mud. Imagine God gathering up the dust from the ground, having a vision of new creation, and forming the mud and clay into the shape of a human being. Remember the Israelites tromping through the mud of the parted Red Sea, making their way from slavery into freedom. See Jesus using mud to transform blindness into vision. Mud is that messy stuff of creation, of freedom, of vision, of new life. It's an integral part of crossing from one place to another. Mud can be the hard conversation that needs to happen to get where we need to be in a community or in a relationship. It can be a tragedy that finally opens our eyes to the truth of a deep injustice or of a need or of a pain to which we might be called to respond. Mud can be the uncomfortable place that we find ourselves in at work or in a love relationship that urges us to figure out what God is trying to do in us or through us. Mud can also be that playful, creative space that we're just moving out and trying to live into something new. Mud is whatever helps us see in a new way. Sometimes we find ourselves in the mud by circumstance, by forces outside our control. Other times we may choose to go there. But either way, the question is whether we will humbly submit and receive what the mud might do in cleansing us, in helping us to see. That, you see, is what the Pharisees can't do. Jesus offers the Pharisees in the story and offers us an opportunity to gain new vision through the messy, painful process that follows that initial miracle in the story. The proverbial mud in the story is the willingness to suspend our disbelief just long enough to catch a glimpse of the change, the radical change that God is always bringing about if we have the eyes to see. Mud in the story is the anxiety-producing dirty work of dealing with our own discomfort that rules have gotten broken. Now, I don't know if there's anybody in here. I mean, we may have in, among us some anarchists. I mean, there may be some among us. I wouldn't doubt it at all. But I also have a sense that many of us like to know what this is the way it's supposed to be. And when it doesn't go that way, we get a little anxious, and sometimes we might even get a little testy and maybe even a little mean. The proverbial mud in this story is the journey inward, where we meet our own fears, our own prejudices, which we all harbor, and begin to recognize that until we ourselves are transformed by love, we will continue to create scapegoats and to cast God's children out of our lives and out of our faith communities. The Pharisees struggled to submit, to humbly submit to the mud, to let go of what they thought they knew, of what they took for granted, their need to assign guilt. And in that struggle, they remained in darkness, unable to see the beautiful truth of what had taken place right in their midst. In their blindness, they didn't even realize they needed new sight. They didn't even know. Today, through this story, we're reminded that we all need new sight, new vision. Preconceived notions, prejudice, fear of change, old patterns and habits, depression and anxiety, ignorance, selfishness, cynicism, skepticism, conspiracy theories. We all have our blind spots that knowingly or unknowingly keep us in the dark, and because of that, knowingly or unknowingly, we hurt one another. And I don't think it's an accident that Jesus uses mud to bring about that new vision that we all need, because mud is made from dirt. And dirt, in its Latin word, anybody know the Latin for dirt or earth? Humus. Humus. Now, what word sounds like humus? Humility. Humility. The root word of humility is humus, dirt, earth. New vision requires humility. The recognition that we have missed some things, that we don't see everything, that our perceptions are not the only perceptions. We do not see as God sees. Humus is also the root of the word human, which is what we become more of as God grants us the ability to look upon others, the world, and ourselves with more Christ-like eyes. It was out of the humus that God created us, and it is with the humus that Jesus does the work of new creation, that humanizing work of giving us new eyes. It's not always a miracle cure. We can get stuck in the mud. And it's hard. But when we humbly ask God to use the mud of our lives to shed light on our blind spots, when we humbly submit and allow God to do something new in us, then the world becomes a little more human, a little less broken, and a lot more loving. And that, my friends, that is what we all need.